अच्छा और उनके बटल ये वही बेमा लाइटिंग है इतना स्ट्रेट माइक्रो यू नीड पीपल लाइक ऑनरेबल फ्रेड टू चेयर टुडे द लाइट विल गो स्ट्रेट ओवर ऑनरेबल मेंबर्स ऑफिशियल्स ऑफ द डिपार्टमेंट the Commission on Land Claims, our stakeholders, ladies and gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning.
It gives me great pleasure on this morning to welcome you to this Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. It would not be out of place in this context of today's presentation to speak briefly on the coronavirus, as this portfolio committee is tied by an umbilical cord to the most vulnerable communities in the agricultural sector, those struggling for restorative justice through land reform, and the poorest of the poor, for whom rural development is an imperative upon which their lives and their lives of families is highly dependent. Notwithstanding the great lengths to which our ANC led government basic needs, such as that is both encouraging in terms of addressing the need for low-cost housing, but also in terms of reducing the carbon emissions footprint, as well as enhancing energy efficiency, clean energy and sustainable development, as well as a legacy we can all be proud of. I want to take this opportunity to welcome the Commissioner of land claims, as well as the team she is here with, but particularly to recognize the presence of both the DGs with the departments, Bamlengane and Bashabane. We therefore would want to ask the Secretary Uba Ukunene, that has joined us today, to tender any apologies that have been registered.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, DGs and the colleagues from various stakeholders. My name is King Kunene. I'm a committee secretary in committees. I'm here to stand for Ms. Kakaza and Ms. Nyanza. So, Chairperson, the apologies that I received, it's for both these officials who requested me to come here. And secondly, on the side of members, I received an apology from Honorable Tapa. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, I must register a bit of concern about the manner apologies are brought into the committee. And I think it was quite a learning experience this weekend in our ad hoc committee on the amendment of Section 25, where we have a clear procedure in terms of being absent and tendering an apology, and I believe honorable members seek their exemption from a meeting through having gone to their chief whips and submitted application for leave, and it is not informal on engagements on the corridors. And I would like to therefore register this concern, particularly with both secretaries not being present today. Umamu Kakaza is a family bereavement, and they will be burying on Friday, of which if we met with such, then you would want to ensure staff is able to get to their family bereavement and attend to funerals, but also have to take into cognizance your place of work and the duties. So funerals are on the weekend. If one is excused after a meeting on a Tuesday, it is ample time to get to a place of bereavement. But also, if you take into consideration Umamu Nyamza has a family ritual they are doing over the weekend, and also that could have been prioritized that the work of the committee is done. As much as we are all here, we all have other engagements we'd like to honor, but we put the work of Parliament as a priority. So I would like to request honorable members to look into the procedural manner of these apologies and how they are brought before the committee, and who takes the sole responsibility of their approval, so that we don't find these shortcomings. Uba Ukunene is sent on the request of both secretaries and without a real engagement with even the section manager. So I've requested to meet with the section manager on this matter. And I hope honorable members, in their capacity in terms of your parties, you may raise this issue, so that it is not only honorable members that are monitored of their attendance and we are signing registry, but everyone that is part of this committee signs a registry, and then we are all able to account for people's attendance. DJ Masenbulele Uba Khona. I was worried with the interministerial committee that was to sit, having hijacked all the executive as well as the officials of the department. So when it was cancelled, it was a bit of a relief on our part, because then we were assured your attendance. I will therefore hand over to yourselves if you have opening words before you hand over to the commissioner on the presentation of the Kuyasa project. But Uba Ukunene has raised his hand. Let's give him the opportunity first.
Thank you, Chair, and my apologies for disturbing. I've just now received that the minister has also tendered an apology for attending the COVID-19. And then also the Deputy Minister T.M. Squatcha and the Deputy Minister Lamino still on sick leave. So those are the ones that I just received, and I just wanted to talk to them. Thank you. Sorry for this day.
Honorable members, this is what I alluded to of these apologies that I just slipped in. Was a lady that when we came in here that was taking food outside there to the Deputy Minister's office, Honorable Squatch. And we asked the lady to request the Deputy Minister that his committee is meeting here. If you are eating the food of the committee, then you must also be able to attend the meeting of the committee. So we asked him to come down from his office. He hasn't come down and therefore cannot accept such an apology being brought before the committee. If people want to sit in their offices, honorable members, and not do the work required and send us officials, and as the executive they want to just feast on the food and not do work, we can't accept that. So we rejected that the food should be taken to the office. And it is in that light that I'm really raising these concerns of these apologies that are just being slipped in. DG? I would like to proceed. I wasn't opening a discussion around these apologies, but I see the head of Honorable State.
Thank you, Chairperson. Not on the apologies, but can I ask, if possible, that after this presentation, we just get a short briefing by the DG on the discussions that the Minister has. I'm really concerned around the response of agriculture towards the virus and spreading, especially looking at how people yesterday and the day before started bulk buying, and that we might have a shortage of food in the stores because people are just panicking.
Honorable members, let's not get ahead of ourselves. I think the coronavirus issues are being led elsewhere in terms of, first and foremost, the presidency has spoken on this. Also, the Ministry of Health has been doing excellent work to update all of us as a nation on the status of the virus. Yesterday, we had an opportunity of various ministers that were able to engage and speak on the virus and how it impacts on the various sectors, including the Minister of Finance, in terms of ascertaining if we had a budget for this pandemic. And I think in due course, the minister will be able to bring this matter to the committee, and I think if there is that request from the committee, we can ascertain from the minister's office their state of readiness to quickly bring this to the committee. You should be aware, honorable members, that even this sitting today was quite challenging after the pronouncement of the president. And therefore, it is only the last urgent business that was required to be dispensed with. And I think the events to come this afternoon in terms of the multi-party engagements will be able to assist in ensuring that we are all understanding on the issues as to what will be happening as far as Parliament is concerned. So let us not preempt things of presentations beyond of today. We might be on a total shutdown, but I don't want to speculate. Let us await the proper information to be communicated, because you would have realized also schools from tomorrow are being shut down, and meetings of this nature that entail more than 100 people have been requested to be prevented as much as possible. I see and I hear in the corridors that Parliament has also taken a step that we shouldn't have meetings of more than 40 people. So you could see that in the engagement, we might not have any sessions beyond this week, but let us await the leadership to come up with the decisions, and it will be all communicated in good time. But I will now, before I hand over. But I get notes sent to the front here. This one is about the Deputy Minister Squatter is sitting with farmers that were coming to the meeting. Now he's sitting with them in his office. An apology was sent both to Manyamza and Mom Albertina Kakas. And I also have been whispered that the apology of the minister was sent to the secretaries by email, which has not arrived and come to us. But these are the concerns, honorable members, I raised, and you can follow up with these issues as to how we deal with them. Let us proceed with today's business. DJ, Nigelagun, and boss.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, honorable members. Chairperson, the Chief Land Claims Commissioner will lead the presentation. The Commission is an autonomous entity established in terms of the Constitution and in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act of 1995. The committee is responsible for the budget of the Commission. You approve the budget of the Commission. It's part of the vote of the department. And therefore, the Director General of the Department is the accounting officer of the Commission, although the Commission is an autonomous entity. We are working closely, very closely, with the Chief Land Claims Commissioner to attend to the issues that are affecting the Commission. And the Chief Land Claims Commissioner is going to lead on the presentation on QIASA, which is a project that is meant to turn around the work of the Commission. Chairperson, I was in a flight with Nkosi Sibekulu last night. He looked very jubilant and vibrant. I'm worried today now he's telling me that he's sick. He woke up sick now. I don't know whether he contracted the virus at the airport, and I feel sorry for Honorable Steyn, who's sitting right next to him. But the Chief Land Claims Commissioner will lead us.
Thank you. Morning to the Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, to the two DGs and colleagues. I am here at the invitation of the Portfolio Committee to present on what we refer to as Project QIASA, which I will explain. I am here with a team, Cindy Benyane, who is the Deputy Land Claims Commissioner, acting. With Mr. Singh, who is the project coordinator in the commission, and Mr. Or Dr. Wayne Alexander, who is the head of the province in the commission. We will, Cindy and myself will do the presentation, but the whole team will take the questions as they come. Thank you. So I think that the first question I suppose I should answer is why the name Kuyasa. The name Kuyasa is it means the dawn of anything, opportunity, doing things differently, reflection. And I suppose then the question would be, why are we doing this now? What we are doing as a commission is an audit of where we are as a commission in terms of the setting of claims. And we are asking ourselves the question, why are we where we are in terms of the claims? What needs to be done in order for us to be able to finalize the old order claims, which are claims that were lodged before the cut-off date of 1998. I will explain. And also define the strategy going forward. And to answer the question, are we geared to be able to deal with the claims that are outstanding systematically in a faster manner, so that we're able to then meet our mandates and obligations quicker than we have been. So it's really about us acknowledging the challenges that have been there in the past and doing a deep dive on what are those problems that are there and how do we then resolve them so that we're able to, because we are aware that the principles and the mandate keeps talking about fast-tracking the settlement of claims. So we said, rather than us being ad hoc, fixing this and that over there and there, let's look at the whole thing systematically so that we're able to then present a strategy that is solid and is able to speak to everything that speaks to the Commission. An example would be the fact that the DG speaks about the fact that he is the accounting officer of the Commission. And that the Commission is autonomous. It's correct, and in law, we are an autonomous Commission. But I think that it was reflected previously in meetings with the Portfolio Committee that even the question of autonomy for the Commission currently is very fluid. And it has been fluid for a number of reasons over years, and has resulted in some of the misunderstandings, for example, of how far does the Commission how far does it end in terms of settling a claim? When does the department take over? So that all of those nuances. So that's what I'm going to try and define. I think for me it's important that I take you through our processes and speak about where we come from, so that as soon as that's giving an analysis of where we are and what we think we need to do, there's an understanding of those challenges that we've had, which have resulted in where we are as a commission. So I'll go to slide two, and really, again, just remind ourselves that the restitution work emanates from the Constitution, and specifically Section 25(7) of the Constitution, which says the person or community dispossessed of property after June 1913 as a result of past racial discriminatory laws and or practices is entitled to the extent provided by an Act of Parliament to either restitution of that property or equitable redress. So that's where then the Commission emanates, through the Restitution Act, which then created the enabling legislation to allow for restitution to happen. And when this happened, then there was the creation of the Commission of Restitution of Land Rights, as well as the Land Claims Court, which were the entities established by law to be able to deal with restitution. And again, our obligation is to settle claims under for people who lodge claims as a result of dispossession that happened after 1980. So the commission was then established, and if you go to page 3, I'm just going to go through that slide, and it actually just defines the various stages of how the commission progressed from the beginning to current, and highlight some of the challenges. So if you look at your far left, 1994, the Restitution Act is passed and the Department of Land Affairs is established then. And in 1995, that's when the Commission of Restitution of Land Rights is established, and the commissioners take office then in 1995. Claims are opened for lodgement in 1995. And the way the claims are opened is that anybody can lodge a claim as long as they would define that the claim was lodged in terms of Section 2 of the Restitution Act, which says that you must prove that, or you must show that you were dispossessed as a result of this racial laws and or practices. So it was publicized for everybody who felt that they fell within that category would come and lodge the claim. The Land Claims Court was then established, and the first rural claim was settled on the 15th of October 1996. I'm showing the timeline so that you have a sense as well of the questions that are asked in general about why have you taken this long, what are the issues. So you begin to see the processes. So which means that the restitution process in itself was legislated as a court process. So a claim could only be settled through a court of law. The process would happen under the commission, but the approval of an order of court would be required in order for a claim to be settled. And this resulted in a very slow pace of settling claims. I think by that time there were about 46 claims that were settled at that point in time because of the slow pace. And in 1997, the first urban claim is settled in 1997. And then in 1998, you saw the first review of the cut-off date for lodgement, and it was extended to 1998. So now this is the final date that is placed that says if you haven't lodged any claim before the 31st of December 1998, you can no longer lodge a claim. So in law, we'll only be dealing with all of those claims that were lodged before that. Even if you felt you had a claim to lodge, if you hadn't lodged it, then you're all out of time in effect. 1999, the process then now changes from the judicial process that I referred to an administrative process. Well, it includes an administrative process. And this is now the introduction of what we refer to as Section 42D, which allows the minister to settle the claim administratively where parties are in agreement that the claim is valid, as opposed to the previous time where all claims were required to go via the court process. And the reason to the idea was that if by this time we've only settled about 46 claims, it means that we are going to have a major challenge, and therefore allowing the administrative process was to say if there are no challenges and all of the parties are in agreement, then the claim can then be settled through a Section 42D of the Restitution Act, which would be approved by the minister. Then in 2002, the post-settlement support units were established in the commission. And again, just to remind you that in February 2002, it was indicated that the claims, all of the claims would be settled in 2005, all land claims. And then in 2004, the first Section 42C was approved, which Section 42C gives the Minister of Rural Development a discretion to approve grants for development for the land that is restored to the community. So it begins to talk about possibility for development opportunities or helping the communities sustain the land that is given to them. And so these grants were then linked to any land claim that was where restoration was happening. There would be a grant that would be associated so that the land is, has an opportunity to be developed. So 2005 came, and which was the initial date for finalization of the settlement of claims. It came came and went, and as you all are aware, it didn't happen. But you can imagine that over that period of time, there's extensive pressure on the Commission to finish the claims because of the obligations that were made. 2006, there was a directive given to finalize all earth and land claims. And in 2006, again, the deadline of the settlement of claims was pushed back to March 2008. And again, in 2008, as you are aware, the date was pushed back again for finishing the land claims. 2009, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform was established, and then at that point in time, we still had not finished the claims, as we had said we were going to finalize them in 2005. Then in 2010, the department started a process of determining the number of standing claims to try and get to the bottom of why we were where we are. And remembering that in the beginning we said that people lodged in any form. You could have one community lodging in three different places, submitting different claims forms, and each of them identifying themselves as the people who were lodging the claim. You could lodge at NGOs, municipalities, and some people would create their own claim forms, so it was a manual lodgement. And so that's why we all often talk about the difficulty in the auditing of the numbers because of the nature of the lodgement, the way it was lodged. And of course, there has been a discussion around documents that went missing very often as a result, and where sometimes we have to condone an application because the claimant would have an acknowledgement letter showing that the commission did receive the claim and therefore acknowledged it. And so we have to condone because there's evidence that we in fact did receive the claim, even though the claim form might have gone missing at that point in time. In 2011, the structure of the commission is then rationalized because before that there were nine commissioners, provincial commissioners. In terms of the Restitution Act, the commission is established by commissioners. So before 2011, each province had a commissioner plus the national commissioner, and they were delegated the powers to be able to settle the claims, because the Restitution Act actually states that the commissioner, the regional land claims commissioner, must sign the settlement agreement on behalf of the minister. And in 2011, the rationalization resulted in only three commissioners being one regional land claims commissioner, the deputy land claims commissioner, and the chief land claims commissioner. And the other people who led the department in the province now were nominated as chief directors, seconded from the department into the commission to support the commission. So they are employed under the Public Service Act and are full-time employees who work on behalf of government for the commission, but they are not in the structure of the commission in law. And therefore the commission consists of three commissioners and staff. The rationalization was a result of challenges that came to fruition then, where there were challenges with commissioners who at the time were seemed to have overcommitted the states, because in that previous year they overspent the budget to the extent that the department had to contribute close to $2 billion into the commission on settlement agreements that had been signed with landowners for the purchase of the properties. The reason being that once you sign the settlement agreement with the landowner, they then would put you to terms in terms of when you can, you have to transfer the properties. And so they started approaching court for directive to force us to comply. And so at that point, we found that the commission
did not have the resources to be able to honor those obligations. And so it was felt at that point that maybe some of the delegations needed to be withdrawn from the commission because they almost bankrupted the state at that point. That was the view. And then in even as I define this process, we continue to settle the claims. Usindi will define the steps of how we settle a claim. But the mapping here just gives you a sense of the various challenges that we've had to face, the changes and the dynamics that continue to be at play while we were settling the claim. Then in 2014, President Zuma reopened the lodgement of a restitution. Remember, it was closed on the 31st of December 1998. It was reopened in the 2014 in July. And the reason for the reopening was that a lot of communities felt that they were not aware of the restitution process then, and they were never given really an opportunity to lodge. And some of the people who had received restoration felt that it was unfair that they would get their land back and their neighbor, who they knew was also dispossessed, didn't get an opportunity to lodge and therefore doesn't get access to this process just because they didn't have an opportunity to lodge. Further on, in the Eastern Cape, there was what was referred to as, not just in the Eastern Cape, a betterment scheme, where the previous government would move communities from areas where they thought were good and fertile soil for the government's own initiatives, agriculture and the likes, and those were usually forced removals. But during the restitution process over the years, when it was time for them to lodge, they were discouraged from lodging because there was discourse around whether they felt within the definition of the Restitution Act or not. And they ended up taking us to court. What's the name of the other one? The Eastern Cape. I'll tell the name of the company that the NGO that actually took us to court to force the commission to deal with betterment claims. And so there were those issues that there was a whole sector in the Eastern Cape. But ultimately, the court said that we should have considered the betterment as part of the. Of the restitution process. And so the reopening happened in July, and then July 2016, 2014, and the intention was that it would last for 5 years, and it would allow for people who had not lodged, had not had an opportunity to lodge their claims, and not for people to relodge. So the process happened, and in 2016, there was a judgment which we refer to as the Lamusa judgment, and Lamusa is an NGO called Land Access Movement of South Africa, who took the reopening, the amendment, restitution amendment of 2014 to the Constitutional Court, and they argued three issues. The first one was that they were concerned about the fact that we're opening the restitution process when we have not even finished the old order claims. Number two, they felt that we had not defined clearly how we were going to prioritize the old order claims versus the new order claims that were being lodged. And number three, they were arguing that the parliamentary process in terms of enacting the legislation was done unprocedurally, in that no proper consultation was done with the relevant stakeholders. And so in 2016, Lamusa won, the judgment was handed down where the Constitutional Court declared the amendment unconstitutional on the basis of not adequate consultation, didn't necessarily go into the other two issues. And Parliament was given 2 years to enact new legislation, and the court said that the commission will not touch any of the new order claims until the old order claims have been finalized or until the new legislation has been enacted by Parliament to address the problem that has been highlighted on the consultation process. And so it meant that by July of 2016, we were told we cannot touch the order of the court. Says you can't touch this. The new order claims. They have been lodged legally in law, but you can't touch them. So they're frozen. By the time the Constitutional Court gave that judgment, we had received about 163,000 new claims. And but those claims are claims that we cannot touch, but are lodged in law. That's what the court order says. They're legally lodged, but cannot be touched, subject to the enactment of new legislation or finalization of their old order claims, where after the commissioner would approach the court for guidance if necessary. So after 2016, the parliament approached or tried to introduce new legislation. It was introduced under a private member's bill, and it sought to remedy the issues that were highlighted by the Lamusa judgment in 2016. However, Parliament didn't have enough time to meet the two-year obligation, and so towards the end of the 2 year, they approached court to ask for an extension, but the parliamentary processes had already gone some way. The amendment had already been tabled, and Lamusa again opposed the process, and in 2019 a court order was issued again by the Constitutional Court saying that it would not allow the parliament to have the extension, that parliament can at their own time enact legislation, but that the new order claims will continue to be frozen until new legislation is enacted, but that the commission must continue to settle the old order claims. And in fact, that we needed to submit a plan, comprehensive plan, to the Land Claims Court on the process of how we intend to fast track the settlement of the old order claims. So this is therefore an obligation from Parliament, I mean from the Constitutional Court, that we must provide a clear plan on the how, which is why we're talking about Project Kuyasa as well, because it requires an audit of where we are and how we need to finalize this case. So if you go to then slide four just shows you the number of claims that were lodged by the cut-off date of 31st of December 1998. Total of 79,696 claims were lodged. And if you notice, you've got the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, and then Gauteng, that seem to have the highest number of claims lodged. But that's not necessarily the true reflection, because in the Western Cape, a lot of the claims are urban registered rights, small claims. We're talking about square meters. Sometimes there are labor tenancy claims. For example, if you were to look at District 6, you would say that in District 6 you've got people who had ownership rights in District 6 and owned multiple properties. You had people who have one property. You had people who were tenants of the owners. And so you've got these various layers of rights. And so one claim form does not actually translate into one form in claim form in the Western Cape, which is an urban registered right, is very different from a Northwest claim, which is in a community, in a rural area, which can refer to, for example, 500 properties in one claim. So those are the dynamics that occur. So as you probably seen in the past, we kept referring to the fact that now we've got a lot of complex claims that we're still dealing with, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. So they are the ones that still have the highest number of claims that are outstanding that we're dealing with, but I think we will speak to that. We still continue to refine our statistics. As already indicated, it was because of the nature of the process and how things happened in terms of lodgement. Certain instances you had provinces who did what we refer to as consolidation of claims, mass gazetting, and perhaps one would argue that it was a result of the pressure that said, you said you were going to finish in 2005, you haven't done so. So if a community was agreeable to be consolidated, they did that. And we find that even now that some of those challenges that we're facing now are having to, in fact, there's a judgment that says that we need to disconsolidate some of the claims. So those are some of the practicalities. So I will ask Uthindi to just take us then to slide 5 of the presentation, which then just goes into some of the details. As I said, this is around us auditing where we are, why we are where we are, and what we need to do then in order for us to fast track as the expectation is.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, DGs, colleagues. To continue from where the Chief Land Claims Commissioner has presented, as a Commission, we've done an audit of the outstanding claim forms that we've got. We've identified 14 milestone areas under which our claims is in our business processes. The first one is lodgement. Then screening and categorization, that is followed up by preliminary investigation, gazetting, further research, then we deal with verifications, option workshops, we deal with valuations, we deal with mediation, settlements, if a matter is possibly going to court, if a file is possibly untraceable, and then other. I think the important point that I need to mention is that when we started with Project Kuyasa, we reviewed business process improvements that our government has done in the past, and one of the business process improvements that we reviewed quite extensively was the one done by the Department of Home Affairs. You might be aware in the past in Home Affairs it would take up to 6 months to get a green ID book, and it was eventually reduced to 14 days. The issue is not that land claims and ID books are the same. The issue is the principles of business processes remains the same. So it was important for us to take those key lessons to see how Home Affairs improved, and for us to identify the business process steps. And in identifying the business process steps, we've basically identified our bottlenecks. Now, our bottlenecks as the Commission lies in three areas. If you look on the screen, you will see we've got quite extensive bottlenecks under the area of further research. That delay is basically caused by the administrative processes you need to follow when you do research. You've got a 90-day period which you allow for comments and opinions to come in after gazetting. You've got an administrative delay in getting contact details of landowners. Landowners can be companies, trusts, CPAs, many such things. The second delay that we have identified as the Commission is regarding valuations, especially after the establishment of the Office of the OVG and the many rejected offers that we are experiencing in land purchases. And then the third major bottleneck in our business processes that we've identified is regarding the issues of our negotiations when we are settling claims. Now, specifically to focus what sort of negotiations, our delays are created within the various sectors, negotiating settlement options for claimants within the various sectors. To move further, we've also identified our land use categories. Our major areas where there's outstanding land claims is in conservation, ecotourism, mining, agriculture, forestry, sugarcane, farming, residential, and mixed. And at the bottom, you will see a TBD block. It means to be determined. That basically cannot be determined because you are still currently busy with the process of research or those specific claims where the claimants are untraceable. Now, Chairperson, to talk about statistics and members, what is outstanding is 7,743 claims. You will see the highest number of outstanding claims is in KZN, there's 3,415, Mpumalanga, 1,412, and then Limpopo, 1,192. The least outstanding claims is in the Free State, the Northwest and the Northern Cape. I just want to emphasize the point that the Chief Land Claims Commissioner has made, that one claim form does not necessarily represent one property. To make an example, you will find a claim form in the Western Cape that has got one urban property, but you will find a claim form in Northwest that has got 500 properties in a rural space. So in order for, and also to emphasize the point that the Chief Land Claims Commissioner has made, claim forms were submitted manually, paper-based, at various institutions, municipal offices. It was submitted at NGOs, it was submitted at court, it was submitted at the commission offices. So we have consolidated information, and we will also be going into verification, a second step verification process by an independent authority to verify the statistics that we are putting on the screen. I just want to then emphasize the point made that we are specifically here and established to, for us to fast track the settlement of all older land claims that have been submitted before the 1998 cut-off date. Now, if I go to slide number 8, we have got 9 interlinked projects that deals with the challenges that we have got under Kuyasa. Number 1 is the our backlog reduction and process improvement. We are developing a backlog reduction strategy which will have every single outstanding claim listed. It will have the land use listed. It will have the hectares listed. It will also have the number of properties under the claim listed, as well as the stage in the 14 steps I've alluded to listed. We will also go through a process improvement process so we can also accelerate the settlement of these land claims. In previous committees, there has been a fact alluded to that if we go at the pace we are going, to settle all the outstanding land claims will take us 35 years. The second project that we've got is the change management and people management, as well as our organizational form. We need to also redesign the commission because our legislation lists us as an independent entity, but we are not functioning as an independent entity. And we then need to improve our finance and settlement models. And those are the facts that I will be explaining further in the various slides that I will be going to. Just to sketch a picture on slide number 9 on the current challenges around the processing of outstanding land claims. We have challenges regarding claimants changing the selected settlement option. We've got delays in phase claims because of multiple owners, land owners. Like I've explained, one land claim does not necessarily mean one a portion of land, and you have to deal with multiple land owners. We had a manual system in the past. We have quite extensive dependency on external role players. We've got the referral of matters to court by claimants and landowners. We've got missing information and untraceable claimants. Our quality of research and further research have been highlighted as a problem. There's quite a known fact of extensive CPA conflict. We've got rejected offers recently, as well as competing and overlapping claims. That is some of the current challenges that we are facing. So as a commission, we have started with the Project Kuyasa process, and we've identified various outcomes that needs to be attended to for us to accelerate the settlement of claims. There's about 28 of them, but they are packaged under these 4 high-level outcomes that I will talk to now. Under Kuyasa, currently we have the backlog process that we need to accelerate. We've got our business improvement process that we need to put in place. So we've got a standard operating procedure. We've got our untraceable claimant procedures. We've got clear handover points between the commission and other stakeholders. and clear document flow. We've got an improvement in our organizational form, people management and change management that goes together in the settlement options. Issues that has not falling under CUIASA but has been identified during the CUIASA process that we will need to attend to is the improvement of legal case management. We need to improve the systems and IT systems that we've got. Yes, it was a manual paper-based system in the past, but definitely going towards the 160 standardized IT systems must be put in place. We must have improvement in the research and the verification. Yes, the time takes long to do this, so definitely the processes that we put in place must assist with it. We must deal with proactive claim management, claims on state land, proactive planning for new order claims, and we must also improve our governance and policies. Now, Chairperson and members, we are in the process of developing a business case. And in developing a business case, the Commission took into consideration various sets of research that was undertaken by various entities in the past. The first of it was a study undertaken by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. The second one was the Policy and Expenditure Review done by GTEC. There was also an extensive investigation done by the HSRC. We also took into consideration the RIA, which is the study by regulatory impact assessment, and also various annual reports from 2014 until 2018. It is imperative that I highlight to you various legislative and audit and parliamentary related standards that we need to comply with. The first one is the LAMOSA 1 and the LAMOSA 2 judgment that the CLCC alluded to, and this has put a microscopic lens on service delivery of the Commission and therefore calls for urgent acceleration of the settlement of claims, improving our operating model and dealing with issues of compliance with the current LAMOSA court order. We have also had the Auditor General that have advised us that as per the PFMA, the Commission is recognized as a national public entity and it must meet the definition of a public entity. Number one is it is established in terms of national legislation. Number two, we are fully funded from the National Revenue Fund. And number three is it should be accountable to Parliament. And basically the Auditor General has recommended that the Commission should analyze the provisions of the Restitution Act and those of the PFMA to ensure that we fully effectively function as the entity that we should be. And thirdly, the NDP, we fall under Outcome 7 as a vibrant, equitable and sustainable rural communities that we must serve. And the Commission has got a vital role to play on the NDP in transformation through the focus of land restitution that needs to improve these processes. Now, in order for us to become an entity, just to talk about figures and going through the business processes that the Commission has done, it is estimated that as a Commission, if we do undertake the appropriate form that we should be, it will cost an additional 600 million per annum to function independently and to have the relevant skills that we should be having. These include HR, finance, risk management, internal audit, IT, IMU, and so forth. Then if I can go to slide number 14, in terms of the Public Service Act and in terms of the public service regulations, we have engaged with the Department of National Treasury as well as with the DPSA Public Service and Administration in order for us to develop this business case that we need to submit as well as the business models that we need to put forward. We have done a baseline assessment looking at other current operating models currently in government at play, what sort of entities that has been done. We have got a draft business case that we have developed. The Department of Public Service and Administration has asked us to get an independent legal opinion regarding any sort of amendments that needs to be happening regarding our restitution legislation. And we've already started the engagement with public service and treasury on the processes that needs to be followed in submitting a business case for consideration. So if I move to the slide number 15, this slide just basically represents the interdepartmental committees and compliance we need to adhere to in order for us to prepare business case. And we are basically saying that by April 2020, we will have a completed business case that can be formally submitted to all the relevant routes that it needs to go to. Our budget analysis, to go to point number A, our organizational design, we have done. We are completing a budget analysis currently. We are reviewing the remuneration of commissioners. We are under D, obtaining an independent legal opinion, which we will have by beginning April. We are in process of reviewing the delegations. We are in process of reviewing the protocols, and we've got draft service level agreements that we are currently discussing with the Department of Agriculture, Rural Development and Land Reform. And these will then contribute as annexures to the submission to the business case that needs to be happening. Then, Chairperson, if we go to slide number 17, one of the bottlenecks I referred to was the delay in the settlement and negotiation of our land claims. And we've also identified the specific sector under which the settlement and delay of the land claims falls under. The Chief Land Claims Commissioner has initiated a process 2 years ago to engage with sectors regarding concerns, challenges, risks that they identified in the settlement of land claims. What we must remember, land restitution is about transformation. We are establishing new landowners in various sectors. From those various recommendations that came from the sector's engagement, as well as the Operation Pakiza report, we have developed an initiative to review our settlement models. And there's a couple of interesting high-level options that is coming out, some that we've already attempted in the past and some that are quite new. We are familiar that as a commission under one, option one, we provide land restoration. That is one that we are well familiar with. Under option two, it's financial compensation. We do that on a regular basis. It's probably the one that we are most well known. Under three is development compensation, looking at besides giving access to land, also giving access to infrastructure, services, etc., etc. Also, in many instances, the land is not restorable under option four, then we look at the option of alternative land. Under conservation specifically, under option five, we have got partnerships and co-management that we work under. And then there's quite two new interesting recommendations that are coming up, because many of those properties that are land claims are not restorable. It's cities, it's townships, it's hospitals and clinics. And one of the recommendations that are coming up is the priority access to state resources, maybe via development of housing or an appropriate development program to the community. And number seven is interesting one that is coming up now from communities, from sectors, and from landowners is an issue of alternative redress and exceptions, where towns, cities, neighborhoods, and streets might be renamed after previously disposed communities. So we've identified where we specifically need to improve our settlement models. I've alluded before that we have got protected areas, mining, agriculture, sugarcane, forestry, and urban and tourism claim. that we need to prioritize, and those seven models that I've referred to before, so we can see what possibly can work in which sector. You might find that it's not a one-size-fits-all in a sector, that you might find a combination of one or two or three even of those. So we have started having engagement with sector stakeholders for piloting these models. We have taken sectors through the claim settlement process. We have taken sectors through the current issues and challenges, lack of informed decision making at information at options workshop is a key one that is coming out. Our generic settlement is a key one because it's not one size fits all. Our lack of technical capacity to resolve complex claims is coming out. And then also models that don't meet the land reform imperatives are also coming out. Just to explain what is a settlement model. A settlement model is a formal or informal framework adopted to ensure a restored land benefits claimants in the long term. It must be collectively agreed between various key stakeholders, and the key stakeholders are the commission, landowners, claimants, and sector representatives, and it must be sector-based with sector-based options, not a one-size-fits-all. Settlement models are adopted for two key reasons. It has long-term benefits for claimants and the economy, and it also balances the interests of multiple stakeholders. Chairperson, we have so far two sector engagements. The sugarcane one has been successful, as well as the forestry. We are now moving into the scoping of the piloting sites that needs to be undertaken. Until Easter, we have put on hold other further engagements on mining, agriculture, urban, financial compensation, and tourism, which is a corona matter.
Chair, therefore, as we'd already indicated, that we have to prioritize a backlog reduction strategy in order for us to be able to settle all of the claims that are outstanding in old order. But at the same time, we have to submit the reports to the Land Claims Court as defined by the Lamosa 2 judgment. And also, we have to prioritize transfer of state land that is under claim to beneficiaries. So those are some of the key priorities that have resulted in the project here. Thank you.
Jefferson, just want to raise one issue, which is not necessarily part of the of this presentation, but it has far-reaching implications for government as a whole. The Colapen judgment regarding the redevelopment of District 6. The judge said restitution is not just about acquiring and giving people back the land. It is both acquiring the land and redeveloping the place where they were removed, almost to the same kind of level that the place was before forced removal. And that is a new definition of restitution. Now, one of the risks we face is that where we have given financial compensation, where we have just simply bought land and transferred it to people, there's a risk that we may be required at huge cost to redevelop communities that were forcibly removed. I mean, if you look at District 6, it's in a city of Cape Town. The property luckily belongs to the state. If it was private property, we would have paid millions of rands to acquire the land. we are fortunate that the land belongs to the state. But the redevelopment for the 954 claimants is going to cost in excess of 1.4 billion rand. So it is something that we just wish to bring to the committee's attention, that in future we could even have litigation to that effect.
Honorable members, as the presentation has eloquently put to us by the late Commissioner Mamukoboto with the delegation from the Land Rights Commission, any questions of clarity? Honorable Kape.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation and welcome the information that has been provided to us. My first question, Chair, is that this Kuyasa, how does it differ from the 2017 Operation Pagisa? Two, the commissioner indicated that the Lamosa judgment froze the processing of new claims. What has happened since this judgment up to today, if we are still having over 7,000 outstanding claims? Have we been working continuously on the older claims, or have we just been sitting and doing strategies? And I want to also ask for the 7,743 that is presented today, how does it came to this number? Because, Chair, I managed to get hold of the presentation at 2017 on Operation Pagisa. On 30th June 2017, the number outstanding stood at 6,558. Hence, I'm asking what's the difference between these two. My other question, Chair, is on the issue of rationalization. I'm looking at everything that is presented, especially on redesigning organogram, monies that is being budgeted for or being funding that are required, especially on issues like HR. Decentralization, I only heard you talking about the issue of overcommitting the state then by the land commissioners in provincial offices. And these are people that are chief directors currently absorbed in your provinces. Is there a problem of going back in the interest of accelerating these processes? Also coming to what is imminent, expropriation, land without compensation, to make sure that we decentralize? Because Akisuri with three regional land claims commissioner, will we be able to make an impact? What will take the department to look into that, decentralizing this, so that there's accelerations? Because, Chair, when you look at all these challenges, I take, if you are responsible for a certain province, you are there, you are able to be abreast of all these things, and it will be quicker, unlike redesigning new strategies every 2 years. Why don't we go back to that, have budget, and say to this land commissioners, this is what you have to work within, these are the criteria, and don't overcommit, because I don't think we'll go anywhere. So I would want to know, for what will it take? That the last point, the option 7 model, special whatever, individual specialing, recognition, land claimants, it doesn't add on to long-term benefits and claimants and economy. I don't think Chair Limna Hekele and claimants will agree to that. Or it should to be, it needs to be reconsidered, that one. For renaming once people have been having money, slaving money, and having alternate plans. I don't think it is fair in the economic terms for our people that have been depossessed. Thanks.
Thank you. Honorable Matlo.
Okay, Chairperson, thank you very much. My input will be on page 8, page 9, 10, and 15. On page 8, Chairperson, there took me, I had the commissioner, but I would also like to welcome the presentation, a well-stipulated information, which helps us to understand. On page 8, Chairperson, the commissioner talked about the identification of 9 interlinked projects. Now, when I look at all this presentation, when they were presenting, it was also talking about coming up with the block on the strategies and whatever. But what I wanted to show, to see here is that I did not see the part of monitoring and evaluation of the project that they're talking about, of which I think if I'm clarified on this one, I'll be happy. On page 9, Chairperson, they talked about the current challenges around processing the outstanding claims. As much as we see all the challenges that they've put on, that they've come across with, specifically with the research, I just wanted to understand what is going to happen. What is going to happen? How is it going to be closed at the end of the day? Because I did not hear clearly when they were presenting what is going to happen with regard to the issue of research. How are they going to close it, or how are they going to be able to deal with it? Number 10, page Chairperson. Here I have identified the issue of time frame. We understand all what they said here on this project, Kuyasa, ongoing, but I did not understand the time frame, which we can also do oversight on the type of on the issue of strategic project as identified in this page 10. The last one, Chair, which is page 15. I had the presenter was talking about the protocol. I can see the protocol, I can even see where it ends and where what is going to happen, but my problem at the end is the issue of the system which is going to be followed on the issue of protocol. Because if we are saying the letter will be sent to the DD.
Please conclude.
Yes, Chair, thank you. It's my last one. If the letter is going to be sent to the DDG without a system that is showing us how, when the letter will be there, for how long, it's going to be a problem, especially if we are not implementing the ISO 13 or ISO whatever. That time it will be another number. But we need to make sure that the ISO 13 is implemented here so that we should not prolong the protocol. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mashal.
Thank you very much, Chair. How many outstanding claims from the previous orders, how many do we have as of now? Because I don't get a sense from the presentation. I see claims that have been lodged, but how many are still outstanding as we speak? Slide 5, we raise further research as a major bottleneck. What are the alternative measures taken by the department or the commission to curb the challenge? Institutional capacity. Does restitution commission has the capacity to deal with the outstanding claims? Chair, I think issue of autonomy of the commission has been coming out very clearly, and I think at some point we would ought to discuss it to say what is the problem, Kashirash? Where are we standing? Because one of the major things I wanted to ask in our previous meetings when we were discussing the budget the quarterly report was, why is Program 4, which is a commission, in terms of learning budget structure, is it in the department? Where is the autonomy there? Are they able to run their own business as an institution, as an entity? Or are they a half entity or a full entity? We must get clarity, Kuti, why is that particular element there? So that because I can sense that commissioners bring it up all over and over, and it's like we need to get into that particular space. Chair, on slide 9, why is the business process not standardized across provinces as part of the challenges? And the quality of research, what is it that we're doing, given that we have indicated that there's this particular problem? Expedite outstanding claims. Do you have the adequate capacity to handle and manage these ambitious claims that we are still dealing with? On slide 22, Chair, they're saying 2 of the 7 sector engagements have taken place. Why are we having this engagement? What is the mandate of the entity? Why are we engaging mining, sugarcane, and so forth and so on? What is the intention? I'm not rising on from a negative perspective, but maybe an understanding, Kuti. As a commission, we're meeting these particular stakeholders to achieve a particular objective, if I can get that clarity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Priyat.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe trying to be quick, a lot has been covered. My fear is the paper system and how you are ensuring, because I know there are a number of claimants who actually have been waiting, and I'm sure all of us have a number of them on speed dial who phone continually. How are you going to ensure that we do not miss anyone from the 1998 land claims? Also then taking into account the new older land claims. And how are we ensuring that paper war, I almost want to call it, is not happening with that 163,000, and envisioning that land claims might reopen again, how are we actually going to ensure that we have a standardized process to actually to ensure that we were able to handle this successfully? Then also speaking to, I know a number of, and I think the figure was 96% of land claims at a certain stage approved that it would rather have payouts than the physical land. And I know you spoke to a 2 billion rand and you almost bankrupted the State Department. What is the Land Claims Commission's viewpoint on this, maybe to get clarity, as in light of what Honourable Schlapp and Honourable Marshall has said, is that a viable alternative? Also maybe taking into account and referring to, I know some land claims where the backlog in actually not having to settle that is due to the fact that you have departments then saying, we want this piece of land, and you have to go back to the drawing board. How is that, how are you actually working towards with your regional departments and specifically your provincial departments of rural development and provincial legislatures, shall I say, to actually speed up this process? You mentioned capacity problems. How are we addressing that? Taking into account, I think it was 7,700 that are still outstanding. And do we have a deadline within the commission to say by when these old order claims will actually be handled? And then maybe also speaking to the autonomy chairperson, and my last question, I think, is do we have a deadline? Is it because I remember, I think in the interactions previously, the department said it is on the table and you are discussing it. What is the deadline to actually have that settled, to get a clear-cut idea in terms of that? And Chairperson, I think that is my story. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. My question and the need for clarity to the department is that most of the past beneficiaries are sitting with either the land being unproductive fallow, others are having obviously squabbles, and you also have others that have either sold or leased the farms in order to make some mint. So the question is, from this review, what were the lessons learned, in order to actually ensure that there are strategy in place to counteract those kind of issues? The second question that I have is that what is the overall budget required to settle this 7,743 outstanding claims, if there is, you know, a budget that has been done? The third question is, obviously, Section 42C obviously make, you know, oblige the minister to provide funding for support of this kind of claim. So I just want to know if there is already, you know, determination done in terms of that particular section to support the 7,743 outstanding claims. Just coming to Honorable Priest's questions. Obviously, with the development of backlog reduction, you know, your process improvement, you will definitely need an electronic system to be in place to track and obviously approve and obviously be able to settle the claims. You are sitting with, at the moment, 30% in terms of your achievement to your target at this stage in terms of your land reform and rural development. My concern is that, you know, this target is really very, very little to really achieve what we need. So the question that I have is that what are the targets set out to achieve after launching this project? You know, what do you aim to achieve? Because at the end of the day, you know, to have this business improvement process without really having specific targets is not going to help us. So I just want to know that. And I think that's all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Montwedi.
Thank you very much. Good morning. Quickly, on the Colopin judgment, that said you don't just give people the land, you must develop the land. I want to find out from the department. So all along you've been giving, most of the time when settlements are done, some of these farms are vandalized by people that were in those farms. Now, it means when you give the land to people, you give people the land where they are actually vandalized, they are not in a productive state as they were before. So have you been giving people land that are not productive as they were before? Why should the department wait for the judgment to say, why didn't you take other programs of the department to support farmers? So that we don't find a situation where there's a Colopin judgment to say also deal with the issue of development when you give land to the people. Now the other issue, Chair, is on the there's a document that I happened to come across where it was a presentation in 2017, and in that budget, that document presented by the department, the minister had said actually that they are moving towards transforming the Land Claims Commission into a Chapter 9 institution, where there was mention of the operation model. It was in 2017. I just want to know why is it not the case? Because clearly most of the problem that you are confronted with is because you are not actually on your own. You do not have enough resources for you to be able to do the work that is entrusted in you as the commission. What is the progress with regard to that, Chair? And then the other one is on the someone said that it will take 35 years to settle outstanding claims, which to me is a very serious concern, because people who have lodged the claims will not actually be the beneficiaries of saying our land has been retained. They would have long died. That's why you have identified some of the challenges as saying untraceable claimants. It is because you take long in finalizing the claims, and people die. Many things happen. Now, because you've identified that as a challenge, why are you not dealing with the issue of processing claims as soon as possible so that the actual claimants of the land get to be the actual beneficiaries of that particular piece of land that has been restored to them? Now, the other issue, Chair, is on the presentation also on the 2017. In Free State there, you mentioned It was made on 30 June 2017, 665 outstanding claims in the first state. And yet in 2020 now, we're speaking about 695. Also in Limpopo, it was 1,862 in 2017 presentation. Now in January 2019, where one is expecting that claims would have actually went down, they're actually sitting at 3,415, the same with other provinces. Is this actually a true reflection in terms of outstanding claims that are still there for what, Chair? Lastly, Chair, I'm sorry, it's on the OVG. Well, it's on the CPA conflicts. And I think Advocate Mukwege or who made a presentation that only 3 out of 300 CPAs are compliant with the CPA Act. And you've identified that as a challenge in conflict. What is it that you're doing? Because clearly...
Thank you.
So what is your position around the CPA? Do you think it's still a relevant model to advise the issue of land is consent, Chair? Lastly, Chair, before OVG, how are you doing in terms of settling the claims so that one must understand as to whether has OVG taken you back or is it actually OVG still relevant? Thank you.
So do you want us to speak
to
the
thing that
was not finished?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to stress this concern of the members around the outstanding claims. I am going to repeat it. I hope you will bear with me. All the claims were 79,696 in all that were lodged. And then in 2014-15, there were 6,691 outstanding. And these dropped by 133 in 2017 to 6,558. But then somehow they increased from 2017 to 2020 by 1,185 to 7,743. I just need to find out what is happening there. And then on page 11, we have the department saying that they have used several studies to find their autonomous business units, the business case for the business units that they want to have. And I went through the report of the South African Human Rights Commission. And in there were 14 findings, which were quite comprehensive and were things that spoke to very pertinent things that have to be corrected by the commission. I would like them to just, maybe if they have time, take us through that or give it to us in writing. What have they done about those 14 findings by the SA Human Rights Commission? And then my other question, Chair, is in becoming this entity, this... Chapter 19. I've got the virus in my mind. But anyway, in becoming this entity, how will that impact on the productivity? Is it really going to help, or is it just about following the legalities and making sure that you are legal? Because I think the focus should be on settling the claims. Mm. All this other wara that's going to take 20 million and per year and whatnot, but is it really going to help us, guys? Thank you.
Thank you, Ombabam. Honorable Stay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'll start with slide 23, the prioritization of state land. I just want to know if the department has got a list of all the claims that's on state land and what is the status of that, and is there any link to that and the 700,000 hectare land that will be transferred to beneficiaries, because I'm trying to find out if there's a link between that. Then on the Lamosa judgment, court judgment, as far as I know, the next date is now somewhere, I think in March, that you need to support to get the report. Just from my side, Chair, thank you for that we got the previous one, but I didn't understand anything about that. Maybe after today it will be easier, but I want to find out if they were happy with the way it was presented, because for me, I didn't understand nothing. Trying to go through that report
Chair, and maybe it will help us today to get some kind of clarification on slide 19, looking at all those ticks and boxes and things. So what does it mean? Because, you know, just looking at it, I have no clue what it is saying. Then, Chairperson, I think Honourable Montwedi spoke about the development of the land. As far as I know, we are still doing that 25% compensation of the value of the land. Are we? And how far is the backlog? I know in the past there was a massive backlog on that payment to people when the land was given with the 25%. So if we can just get some kind of idea of that. Then if the department can give us an indication of how many cases Section 42E expropriation was used in the past, and was there any lessons learned from that? Chairperson, and then looking at slide 13 of the 600 million rand that they think is going to be needed to go on their own, what is the cost of current court cases, of cases that long outstanding? Because I almost think that if it's going to work, if we're going to move quicker through this process, if there's, you know, a separate dedicated department dealing with it, we might spar, I don't know what the English word, recover or save some cost on all these court cases. I don't know how many court cases there is currently, but I know in the past the amount that was used for court cases was massive. So can we get some kind of idea if we can recover some of the cost if we're going to move faster? Then, Chairperson, slide 9 with the current challenges. One of them is business process not standard across provinces. To me, this is a massive concern.
Can you conclude?
That we are today still sitting with that as an issue. I know one of the reasons why the court cases was, you know, massive in the past was this reason, or this was one of the reasons. So if we can just get some kind of a find out where we are. Then I think the Betterman claims, is that the Mazzanini case, just for myself. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ndabezi. Kosi Kabiko.
Angibonge, sir. Mhlawumbe uzwana ukuthi nangiphinda sekushiwo ngozakwethu, kodwa nje what I wanted just to establish from the department and the commission, what prolongs the release of land, which is farms that are under the state, to the claimants? Secondly, the plans in place to guard the buildings of those farms against the vandalists who are vandalizing those farms, and the provisions for the beneficiaries when maybe the land claim commissioner wants decide to release the land to those, because obviously they'll find the ghettos when they go and occupy the farms. The last chairperson is a concern, and maybe what if it can be established exactly when the claims were gathered, we were informed that there would be no exchange of land soon after the gazettes were issued on certain farms. Now we are seeing the officials continuously leasing those farms which have long been gathered. What is the position of the department together with the commission on those issues? There was a farm in one place which has been leased to a certain could be a CPA or an entity, if I could call it, which was done in 2017, I think, and it has been leased for 30 years, and that farm had long been it was one of those farms that were under claims. Maybe one could get an explanation. And the destruction of the fences on those farms, it is taking place because they are unoccupied currently, but some are owned by the state. What's the take on that? Thank you.
Thank you, Ndavezita. Kapa or Kogu Koban. Oh, it's the staff, Mamu Pepeteka and Mamu Kash. I thought there were other honorable members at that time. Thank you, honorable members, for your questions, and I think the department and the commission will attend to the questions as posed, but perhaps we need to ask ourselves, in terms of the land claims already lodged and the other land claims of 1998 that are still pending, let us welcome the Deputy Minister, Honorable Squatcher. Siyabulela, DJ. We need to ask ourselves in terms of the land claims, and I was hoping Honorable Mahlatsi will be here when I speak to this. To say, honorable members, we have embarked on public hearings of the amendment of Section 25 of expropriation of land without compensation. And one of the key issues there is that of 1930, where various communities we've been listening to have called for the subsection of 1913 to be removed because it is one of the greatest impediments. Now, I come to the issue UDG is raising of District 6. Ubao Shaban says District 6, fortunately, state land. Ucho DG. State land, and you are able to attend and locate the land to the 954 claimants. Now, I would want to go back in terms of us addressing and redressing the injustices of the past. And dealing with this matter, we then have to ask the question, if we've embarked on a fraudulent process, if you then look back to 1652, the arrival of Jan van Riebeeck and the immediate contestation by the Khoi from his arrival and the building thereof. It says here, in terms of the arrival of Jan van Riebeeck and the Dutch, it was the Dutch encroachment and expansion into areas such as Table Bay and beyond that resulted in conflicts with the Khoi. Dutch perception of land as a commodity with monetary value, which could be privately owned, exchanged, or sold, was at odds with the Khoi's view of land and grazing pastures as a property of a community, not the individual. This is highlighted by the early tensions over land occupied by Dutch around the castle area. For instance, in 1655, when the Khoi built their shelter and grazed their cattle close to the fort, the Dutch attempted to chase them away. The Khoi refused to move, declaring that the land was theirs and that they would attack the Dutch if they were not permitted to graze their cattle or build their huts wherever they chose. And the VOC further inflamed the rising tensions by granting land to freebergers on Saldanha Bay, Swartland, and Table Bay. Jan van Riebeeck also ordered the planting of bitter almond trees, bramble and thorn bushes as boundaries along farms to keep the koi cattle out of the company-owned lands, which led to the rising tensions over the lost pastures between 1654 and 1659, which exploded into open conflict in the First Koi and Dutch War from 1659 to 1660. This, angered by the colonialists' increasing cultivation and restrictions to prime grazing land, a group of Khoi men led by Dorman seized seven of the company's draught oxen. The Khoi hoped the colonialists would desist from farming activities and thus open up grazing land. An armed militia was organized by the company and sent to recover the cattle, while some settlers fled to seek refuge at the fort. Dorman, who led the assault on the Dutch, attacked them on rainy days when the gunpowder of their muskets would not ignite. By 19 July 1659, he was injured in battle and retreated to Saldanha Bay. And I can continue on this, quoting the Gorikwankwa, I can't pronounce Khoi, you'll excuse me, honorable members, and the various other Khoi communities that fought for these lands. And today, government and the department tells us this is state-owned land that they are giving back to 954 beneficiaries. If Dorman was alive today, it would be a signal claim to a tribe of the Khoi with their leader, the land that we speak of. So this is why I battle with this issue of land claims and if we have indeed embarked on a fraudulent process of land claim upon land claim, rather than looking at the real issue at hand. And I hope this expropriation of land without compensation could be fast-tracked and realized so we can deal with redress issues with real sincerity. Because here, DG, you are sitting with claims that speak to District 6. If you go down to history and to what I'm speaking to about the Khoi, with the ship that was brought in 1713 and eliminated 90% of the Khoi population with smallpox, will tell you that we are masking a grave injustice, particularly to the Khoi citizen, who have not been able to be truly attended to in terms of these land claims. But let me come to the presentation, honorable members, because this will need a political decision, maybe outside these rooms, as to how we arrive in attending and dealing with these land claims. In coming to the presentation put to us, in our previous meeting, Honorable Steyn referred to the department as a work in progress, I quote. We took it as a matter expressed in jest. However, this presentation, most of all, perhaps will make us to take the matter of work in progress very seriously. The following are worth noting. On the 27th of May 2015, the Commission appeared in Parliament with a response to the South African Heritage Research Council findings. In 2015, already the Commission said that outstanding claims were 8,035 that were outstanding. The Commission further reported that a business case was being drafted then. On the 10th of October 2017, the Commission reported to the Portfolio Committee of Rural Development that there were 6,558 outstanding claims as of the 30th of June 2017. Yet today, Honourable Members, the Commission reports that the total outstanding claim is now sitting at 7,743. This is more than the number announced in 2017. It means that since May 2015, the Commission has only settled 292 claims. By all standards, this is a very low number of claims settled or finalized over a five-year period. Similarly, in the Free State, as Honorable Muntwedi alluded, the Free State had 7 outstanding claims, yet today it only has 5. So in the last 5 years, the Free State has actually settled 2 claims. What we see from these different presentations is that the stats of the Commission are not reliable. What is the Commission actually doing to ensure that there is credible and reliable database that gives consistent figures of outstanding as well as settled claims? Let us note that the Kuyasa outcomes are similar to those of Operation Pakisa Minilab for land reform, especially acceleration of settlement of land claims. And it will lead us to raise such question as, is Kuyasa just a name change of Pakisa? If Pakisa was not implemented, how is the Commission going to ensure that this new strategy is actually implemented? As the Ad Hoc Committee on the Constitutional Amendment of Section 25 continues with its public hearings, which I've alluded to, the committee is receiving many queries about land claims, which the first lot of Mpumalanga we have already sent to the Honorable Minister, Uma Mutitiza. We have also now compiled a list of queries that came out of the Northwest province, which by end of business day today, we will be sending to the minister. But honorable members, it is quite clear that the communication strategy of the commission, if it exists, has not yielded any fruitful results. There are many claimants, both pre-1998 and the new order claimants, who come to the meetings of the public hearings to inquire about progress with the settlement of their land claims. And I'd like to understand what are the Commission's plans and strategies to keep people informed about the status of their land claims as required by the Restitution of Land Rights Act. I will pause there, Mamkoboto, and let you and your team to engage with the questions raised by the honorable members, but also DG, hope that you would clear light in terms of this new process that we have embarked on in terms of public hearings and the impact it may have on the dispensing of the current land claims. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thank you very much for those questions. We'll try and respond to all of them, and
ask that, and then the rest of the members will respond. Perhaps if I should start on the issue of our statistics. Honourable Chair, I think that in every presentation that we have done, perhaps for as long as I've been a commissioner, since 2012, we have indicated that we've got serious challenges with our statistics, exactly because of the nature of the lodgement that happened then, where we'll have one claim but five claim forms sitting in different spaces. Claim forms that went missing. So, which is why when I went into the history of the commission, I was wanting to explain exactly the challenge that we have. And therefore, even as we would present the slide, there would be a condition at the bottom that would say we are continuing to clean up our statistics because of the previous challenges. I spoke about that at some point there were consolidation of claims and the counting didn't happen in the normal process. And therefore, we have been upfront from the beginning that our statistics are a challenge, which is why we are saying even now we are going to get to a point where our stats get audited by an external party, so that once and for all we're able to then account and say after the process that we've engaged on, we now finally have the correct numbers. Not that we have not been attempting all along to clean up our database. I remember at some point in 2012, we were told that there was a box of claims that were found in Khayelitsha somewhere that we then had to add. So those are the type of dynamics that are on the table that the Commission has to deal with and that we have not shied away from and that we've placed on the table that as far as our stats are concerned, we have a challenge there. We've got an individual who will come with an acknowledgement letter and say, I lodged a claim, but there is no claim form in the Commission. So those are the challenges, which is why we've got this process. And then the other question is, why would you be doing the Buyasa project now? Okay. So there was a Pakisa process in 2017, and one of the outcomes was that we need to deal with the backlog of claims in the Commission, and we need a clear plan. The Commission then, as a result of the Pakisa then, engaged in its own mini-lab, which was part of the Pakisa, and the outcomes was for us to put up a plan in order for us to be able to settle these claims in a comprehensive manner. So we as a project is not a standalone project. It is as a result of the processes that have come from the 2017 Pakisa project. So it's us taking the resolutions of Kuyasa to the next level. Kuyasa basically said fast-track outstanding land claims. And so we began to say, but how? What does fast-track mean? We then are at this point where we are unpacking in detail what outstanding claims look like in each province, identifying in each district the nature of the claim, identifying the challenges that is associated, and what interventions need to happen in order for us to finally say we've caused the outstanding claims. For example, we cannot cause the outstanding claims comprehensively because we are not completely clear of what it is 100% that is there and the nature. And remember, as we said, claims are different. You can have a claim that you settle through a standard settlement of 160,000. And you can have a claim where you spend 120 million and it's one claim. And so it's very difficult to say that I've got 10 claims and therefore it's going to equal to a million rand for the 10 claims because it depends on the nature of the claim. And so we are hoping that finally, instead of us, for example, looking at one issue that crops up that says you've got a challenge with research, we then run and try and resolve that issue. And then someone else comes and says, well, we did an audit. Your standard business processes are there, but they're not adequate. And then we run and do that. We want to look at it comprehensively and say, once and for all, here are all of the problems of the Commission. and this is what we want to put in place. So it's not as, it's not that we have not been doing anything. It's about now saying comprehensively, let's clean house once and for all, looking at all of the lessons that we've learned across the board as we progress. So yes, we have continued to search claims. I think Usanje will give you the numbers in terms of how many claims, let's say, for the past 5 years that we've settled, and we've continued to settle the old order claims. We will not lie to the portfolio committee and give numbers and say that they're definite, because we have already indicated they're not. So on the issue of why that we're sitting at 7,000 now, the 7,000 comes about because of the vetting that we're doing now and what we're beginning to uncover. And it doesn't help for us to say we're not going to own up to the fact that we've got these issues that we have to deal with. But we are continuing to settle, and we're hoping Cindy will give the timelines in terms of how quickly we want to finish the process. We can then officially say that the numbers have been audited independently, and therefore. So, for example, in the Free State, yes, we are sitting with 5 claims now. And the issue in the Free State, because we have also thought that we would have been finished by now in settling claims in the Free State. But we've got major challenges around the nature of claims. For example, state land that is difficult to transfer. We've identified, for example, we're speaking about our stakeholders' issue. We've identified that it's difficult to transfer state land because of all of the other protocols that you have to engage in order for you to finally get to the transfer of the state land. But as part of the project that we're refining those processes to say, our business process is complex, cumbersome, or it takes too long. How do we then do things quicker? For example, if you're supposed to gazette notice, should it sit for 90 days or should it sit for 30 days? Because the 90 days then prolong the process. So those are the granular details that we want to get into for us to be able to then finally say, after comprehensive assessment, this is where we are as a commission, this is what we need. And then also talking about the question of the Chapter 9 institution. The Chapter 9 institution was a political mandate. I think it was under the first parliament. But remember that we operate in terms of what is approved. That was not something that was approved. And currently, as a commission, we're sitting at Program 4 of the Department of Rural Development, which is now Department of Agriculture, Land Reform, and Development. So those are the nuances that we have to, or the space that as commission we have to play in. And we find ourselves in that space, and we have to do the best that we can in the space that we find ourselves. The issue of autonomy is an issue that was on the table, as you've indicated, a long time ago. But in order for you to be autonomous, you need capacity, you need resources, and you need approval for that to happen. And so we are continuing to ready ourselves for that opportunity where we are finally autonomous. But we are saying again, the AG has said, in terms of the law, you're autonomous, so comply. But in order for you to comply, we don't have HR, we don't have risk, we don't have audit committee. But we understand that in the context of where the economy is, we cannot expect that we're going to be given all of those resources. We want to sign service level agreements formally with the department so that they're able to provide that capacity. But as I said again, the Bugyasa project seeks to say, let's audit where we are comprehensively, rather than closing gaps as and when they arise and not looking at the full picture. So really, that's what we're doing. But if I want to go to then to the questions, I've already responded to the question of Bugyasa. The new claims were not allowed to touch, as I indicated. Lamusa says those are frozen until you finish the outstanding claims. So if the outstanding claims are not fast-tracked through development of smart processes for us to get to the end quicker, we can never then get to the new order claims, which is why, again, the importance of Bugyasa in trying to say, you've been doing this thing in this way for a long time, and it takes a long time. So how do you then change such that you are able to do things quicker, and what are those opportunities?
So all of those, the redesign, including the lessons learned around when the state was overcommitted, the question of decentralization also is part of the CUIASA, where we have acknowledged that it's going to be important that we decentralize so that the commissioners are able to operate on the ground and are able to have quick turnaround times. We've taken the note of the M&E of the projects. The research challenges, again, are issues that we have identified, and as part of PAGISA and others, we've identified them as challenges, have been highlighted by the Human Rights Commission as an example, the PME, and so we put interventions in place as we went along. For example, the research, we augmented our capacity through using universities. For example, we've used Forte, UKZN, Venda, and other universities. But while we did that, we then experienced challenges, even with the universities, in terms of the nature of the quality at times of the research that we're getting. So again, we have to do the review and say, what are the lessons that we've learned in that process? For the past 2 or 3 years, our research, a lot of the ones that is complex, has been done externally through the support of those entities that have been helping. But again, we're saying now that the contract is coming to an end, what are the lessons that we've learned there? And how do we tweak things so that we're able to do things differently? The issue, I think the question of why we are in the structure of the department, I think it's part of the history, and the rationalization issue, and which is why we are now wanting to define our space and be clear about where we are and what our obligations are, especially because in terms of the Restitution Act, the Commission's mandate is to receive, receive, investigate, and settle claims. That's technically what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to be talking about development, about what happens after the land has been transferred, but because there are grey areas currently in where we are sitting, it's become very grey, and very often the claimants also, there's an expectation that you bought the land, so if the claimants are fighting, we must sort out the fact that the claimants are fighting. If the CPA is not meeting their obligations in terms of governance, the expectation is that the commission must give you that. So if you look at all of those that comes our way, that we end up having to deal with, but at the same time we're expected to finalize these claims, finish them quickly. And if you look at the capacity, the structure of the commission at some point in the department was version 2.9, I don't know, 2014, we're sitting at 55% capacity of what that structure says. So capacity is a major issue for us. And so we continue to do the work despite the fact that there's a capacity issue, and also that the variation of the mandate is very clouded, and we end up having to go and deal with this piece of CPA, go back to unbundle claims that were settled in the past, and therefore, if you look at what we have to do going back to resolve the issues that we thought we had resolved versus having to settle a new claim, in fact, we find that it's easier to deal with a new claim in terms of settling it because our business processes are relatively okay than unpacking a claim that was settled in 2007 that we now have to deal with because the court said you have to go in and bundle that claim in the manner that you settled it. So those are some of the nuances. A paper-based system, yes, when the old audit process was done, it was paper-based, but when we lodged claims in 2014, it was electronic. So we learned lessons from the previous lodgement, and we ensured that in 2014 it was electronic lodgement, and they could only do it in our offices and with a proper standard protocol. On the question of the payouts that are mostly financial, I think it's not as simple as that. It depends on the nature of the claim and also the area where the claim is. For example, I was making an example about Eastern Cape, where a lot of the claims happened in rural spaces where people were moved from one village to the other, and the claimant community then say that they don't need additional land, they need
resources to be able to develop the land that they now occupy. And so in that instance, you're going to have financial compensation, not because they say they don't want land, but they are opting to develop what they have rather than extend what they the land that they have. Whereas if you have a case in other instances where there has to be financial compensation because the land is not restorable, and then the claimants opt for financial compensation. And in terms of the act, they are entitled to choose the nature of restitution that they want. Again, the issue of the land that is unproductive, fallow, leased back, I'll leave out the leased back issue for now. I think that's why we are saying that it's important that our settlement model speaks to the sustainability of the project. But we're clear and understand that for the project to be sustainable, it's not the responsibility of the commission to do so, because our responsibility is to investigate and settle the claim. But it's the responsibility of government to ensure that we provide the package overall that is going to create the sustainability of the project. For example, we'll have land that is in conservation, on conservation, that is in the Department of Environmental. Claimants get restoration, not in the form of them occupying, but in the ownership of the land. But conservation continues, and they have a co-management agreement with the department, or, for example, with SMPL, for development opportunity that can come out, whether it's an ecotourism, and therefore then they benefit from that. So that requires comprehensive strategy with all of the stakeholders, and the commission relies on those stakeholders to be able to assist us so that the settlement happens. 2008 settlement undertaking was done by the two departments, that this is the process that will happen, co-management in conservation. But in order for it to be successful, it's DEER, it's the other stakeholders that need to come to the party. But even if we would have transferred the land, if the other stakeholders don't do what needs to happen, then we've got claimant communities who come back to us to say, you gave us the land, but we're not benefiting from it. And we need the stakeholders to be able to help us address that issue. Section 42 says still approved by the minister. I know that now the minister has set up I don't know if you want to talk to the later to the post-settlement plan that has been set up to deal with the what we call development or post-settlement. The reduction strategy is part of PAGISA. I mean, of Kuyasa, as I said, it's a comprehensive approach to identify exactly what we need, including an end-to-end business system, IT system, which we already started in 2014 when we reopened, because we received the claim through an electronic lodgement system. So we want to use that portal as the first gate towards an end-to-end settlement of claims electronically. Sanjay will deal with the issue of outstanding claims on state lands. We were doing relatively well before the Office of the Valuer General. I think our target then of settling claims, we were targeting around 1,000 trust claims that we're settling each financial year. And we've had to reduce that to about 450 claims after the Valuer General. We've raised the issues, and I think the committee is aware of those ones. On the findings of the Human Rights Commission, I think that we will probably have to go and look at it, and then we'll prepare something in writing to the commission, I mean to the committee, on whether we have complied with that. But that's an example of the issue that I was talking to around ad hoc identifying an issue that is raised, and then you go and close that gap, but you don't look at the issue of the commission holistically, because I'm sure that we probably acted on it. Sanjay will assist with the list of claims on state land versus the 700 700,000 case issues on of state land. Expropriation, Section 42E of the Restitution Act allows for us to expropriate land if the parties don't agree with the settlement and the claim is valid. And that, I think that by beginning of the year or last year, we had expropriated about 27 properties, and I think the first one was in 2003 or 2006, if I'm not mistaken. It was in Benil in the Northern Cape. That was us using Section 42E of the Constitution Act. But again, it refers back to the Constitution, but also refers back to the Expropriation Act of 1975. As I already indicated, the issue of release of state land to beneficiaries who claimed under state land, we found that it becomes very complex. Some of the land is owned by public works, it's owned by province, by other, and so in order for you to be able to finally get the land release, you have to also go through all of those protocols that are necessary. But through the assistance of the IMC on land reform, we are working with other departments to try and fast track that process so that we're able to focus on transfer of state land. So, which is why we highlighted it in the presentation, because it's a mandate from the President of the country and the IMC that we must fast track the transfer of state land that is under claim. I think we have acknowledged that that our staff still have a lot of work, and at the time when we presented the outstanding claims, that was a correct number in terms of the records that we have. We had, but with the aggressive vetting and auditing, we've identified that there were some gaps, and that's what we're working on. Communication strategy, we have a district-based consultation that happens in the province, in the provinces, so that we proactively try and communicate. We've also decided that we'll send out SMSs to some of the claimants and also send a letter on the ones that lodged the new order claims to say that we're not able to process those ones. But in order for us to support the committee on the expropriation without compensation consultation, we would be prepared to make sure that there is a representative of the commission in those hearings so that we're able to provide the support if necessary. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I've left out.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, just to address the question on the timeline, if I can go through the 9 projects that was raised. Kuyasa is a 3-year project. It has started in April 2019 and closeout will be in 2021. Just to talk about progress on the initiatives, when it comes to the backlog reduction, we have established our backlog baseline. The only outstanding matter is now the verification of the baseline, which is estimated to be finalized September this year. When it comes to the process improvement, we've analyzed our as-is business processes and our root cause analysis. I've presented it today, and we are looking that it will be finalized by December this year for rollout to happen to provinces for consistency across provinces. Rollout will also include a project management template, monitoring and evaluation on a monthly basis, and reporting when it comes to that issue. When it comes to the people management, we finalized our as-is microstructure analysis, just to also address the question raised by the Honourable Member on the capacity of the Commission. Our current microstructure has got capacity of 1,500 staff members. Post-filled and funded is 750, which is 50% that is required. Just an interesting fact that we did as part of our age analysis under Kuyasa, we have mostly staff on 50 years plus. So it's something that will need attention because we've got an aging staff that will soon be starting going on a retirement. On our organizational form, we have finalized our as-is baseline. The business case we've estimated takes about 2 years for approval, and the submission will be happening from June for further processing. I've presented that. On the financial models and settlement models, we finalized our baseline establishment as well as done an extended literature review. We are now in the design and stakeholder consultation process towards the pilot, and the pilot is estimated for 24-month period. I've noticed the recommendation that the Honourable Member made about the point number 7, which is the issue regarding exceptions. As I've mentioned, we are in pilot stage. Interesting enough, this was one that has come from claimants, because as part of the consultation in sectors, there were also claimants that was consulted. And that's why I've mentioned that the settlement options will most probably not be one, but it will be a host of and a combination of it. Just to add on to this one, it comes up consistently, yes, you've restituted my property or you've paid me financial compensation, but my elders and my ancestors were there. I would have liked some naming. Claimants always come forward to happen in remembrance of that. And that is basically the time period for the Piazza Project Chairperson. Thank you.
Okay, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and DGs, CLCC Committee. Okay, good day. Again, in response to a few of the questions, I think one of them was in terms of state land of the 700,000 hectares. I think, our contribution of it is 342,000 hectares that we're currently analyzing right now. All right, in terms of what's been settled and what still needs to be settled. On the issue of the number of claims settled, Chairperson, that you asked, I don't have the figures with me right now, CLCC, but I'll be able to afford you what you've settled over the last 5 years. Okay, I'll be able to provide that. But in terms of just doing a kind of very quick analysis, Chairperson, in terms of what you've indicated, in terms of the status outstanding, I think the 7,743 that is here that we've indicated today, and as we said, it's work now in progress. In terms of appointing a sales provider or an auditor to actually assist us in finalizing the figure. But if one looks at the margins of the 6958, that's been mentioned, versus the 7743, one would see that even as early as 2017, we are within an 89 to 90% accuracy. So we know it's 100%, sir. Okay, now, but in terms of the challenges that we've had, Okay, now this was a work in progress on it. I think there was another question that was asked, is that can we run our own budget? Yeah, offhand for us to run our own budget right now is not possible. I think that therefore there's a need for SLAs for the department right now. Yeah, okay, then only we can move forward with this. Otherwise it's going to be extremely difficult. Okay, because we're looking at audit committees, risk committees, the financial statements and so forth, and we don't have that capacity right now. So help will certainly need in that regard. How much is it going to cost us to settle the outstanding claims? I think it's going to be rude for me to do that right now. I think there's a process that we are that's unfolding in the commission. Okay, there's a lot of work that's gone into the 7743 in terms of looking at things per claim, per property. And I think once it's finalized, Chairperson, then we'll be in a position to come to you with a well-being to say this is what it's actually going to cost us. It's a very good answer for us to come to. Right. So there is the answer.
Sorry. Thanks very much, Chair, and good day, everybody. Maybe just want to preface by saying that 2 years ago when I entered the Commission, I made observations and I shared it with my colleague. I do note, for example, if you look at the stats and we look at the issue of research, I think in many ways we've underestimated the importance of research. I think we haven't really understood the intensity of which research must be done for us to have credible information that we could offer. And I do understand that we all need to have targets, but I think that in its very nature kind of push people to do things in ways that we couldn't really understand why we were doing it in that sense. And I think we've learnt the lessons going forward, Chair. The other issue that I also realized is that the onus of lodging a claim is left with the claimant. And that also leads to the fact that you are dependent on the claimant to come forward with information, and that you almost need to say, after a time, we can't wait anymore. However, we've also picked up, when they do come with it, it causes lots of us having to unbundle things with the kinds of sum of information we're sitting with. And I think those two, for me, were very important learnings as to how we could start unbundling some of the challenges, Jim. And then the last one is that I understand, and I like the history that you tabled, Chair. However, we also need to understand at the time the multi-party arrangement at the time allowed for the discussions where decisions were made around the 1930 Land Act, for example, and decisions were made around how we came to therefore settle the claim, or the claim should be lodged by 1998. Without, in my opinion, taking in lots of other factors that's now complicating matters for us. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members, colleagues. I think there was a question on both settlements. We have taken that responsibility from the team. We have now profiled all the lands that has been given to communities, and working with those communities, we are beginning to identify the needs and put the budget together with our agronomists to ensure that those lands are productive. So we are taking over the issue of post-settlement as far as the restituted lands are concerned, and we are taking that work away from the commission.
The first Bawe I do is a teach. You're done. You're bringing it back to the chair.
I'm sorry, Chair. I did not formalize this.
No, thank you.
I just thought it was on the floor. You said teach. And formally, the president said it's yours now. So I just wanted to make sure that we clear the issue of both settlements, which is a mammoth task, but we're working on that too. So it's over to you on our side, Chair.
Thank you. Bao Sanjay, let us request that you send us the stats that you say you will try and compile by Friday. If you can, we'll appreciate that. Honorable members, any follow-up questions, and I'll only take hands that have been put. Honorable Mahlo, Honorable Mahlatsi, Honorable Montwedi, and Honorable Spain.
My suggestion is that as much as though he's sending some information about the things that the chairman is asking, they must also vanish us with the issue of the protocol in terms of the ISO dating. Thank you.
Honorable Mashati.
Chairperson, I was comfortable with the responses that the commissioner, but moving forward, I got a little bit confused, precisely because the intention of this particular document that was presented here is to give us a broader analysis in terms of what the institution ought to achieve in the near future. But I want to find out, how long has this issue of capacity been? What has been the status quo from when up until when? And what is the intention of the department in changing the status quo? Now that indicated that it's not possible for them to manage their own budget. It's not possible because there's no the capacity issues. Because our intention is, for as long as this particular entities are not functioning properly, we are going to continuously have problems. Now, what is the intention of making sure that things are in order so that we are able to move? This post-settlement and everything else will not work for as long as there is no capacity in this particular institution. And what are the plans of the department in that regard? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Kinta De Sanjay. Yes. Honorable Montwedi.
Thank you very much, Chair. I got worried by the response from the Commissioner on the issue of train. You had claims of about 1,000 per financial year. Since the OBG came, it went down to 450. And that's a very, very significant decline. And what actually happened? What has the department done in addressing that? Because clearly, OBG is a stumbling block towards you finalizing the claims as you did before. Now, the other thing, Chair, is on the... you say some claimants walk into your office with acknowledgement letters with you not having the documents in there. How do you verify that those letters are actually authentic? Are people not just making up letters? What systems do you put in place in dealing with that? And as soon as you got a letter, such acknowledgement, what is the process going forward? Should they do the resubmission, update the file, and this and that? And the last one, Chair, is on the, I think the doctor spoke about the institution not doing well around issues of research, where it's actually about 30% of the current delay in the institution. And my concern is that this was noted in the SA HRC in 2015, and it still remains a problem to date. Why are you actually not dealing with it? Because it can't remain a problem. Why are you not improving your research and development unit so that these things do not have to come over and over again, Chair? I think that is that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
I think clearly the Commission, either you guys are also not ready to be on your own. Because it's like each and every time you speak, you say it's not possible, this, you put reasons of you not being independent for more than you put reasons of you being independent. Why can't you think of you being an independent, say, department, do this, sign this, do this, and say, DG, we're having a problem with the minister, the deputy minister, they're not doing 1, 2, 3. It's like you are not ready to be on your own. Hello from what I'm hearing from you.
Honorable Stein.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for responses. There's just a few things that I didn't pick up on the response. So one is the cost saving between the 600 million and the current cases that import. Mention of the District 6 was made, that kind of cost factor, and if you actually think it will be better to be on your own, I didn't get that clarity on that. And do you have some kind of idea of what is the current backlogs or cases in court and the cost of that? Because I know in the past it was massive. Then, Chairperson, thank you to the DG for answering that the department is taking over the development side, but I want to know if the 25% development money is still at play, or that we change policy again somewhere. How far are we on that backlog, and do we keep backlogs of that? Because I know that is also one of the challenges that I think was in court in the past. So if we have changed policy or development on that, it needs to be communicated in some way, because people are still expecting that. Then, Chairperson, the other one is there was mention made by communities on communal land that would opt for financial payments. I know in the past some of those communities were informed that they cannot actually put in a claim. I want to know, it's where you said villages and villages were moved, that kind of scenarios where people are actually currently on land. But I know some of the people who claimed in the past was on private land, they're now on communal land.
I don't know if I make myself clear, because I know of members that wanted to submit claims and they were told they can't. So is that still the case over certain people? And then just Chairperson, something that I just thought about now, I don't think it's a good idea now to think about it, because everyone's going into a financial difficulty with what is happening in the world. But District 6, would that not be a perfect model for the private sector to become involved? To do a kind of, you know, to mommy nothing. When we say, okay, we've got the land now, so let's get involved and show how we can then build a community back. Because I think it's a very, you know, a practical way for communities to come back and private sector to come back and to build this, because District 6 is a very well-known case, and you've mentioned it, Chair, and I was asking, just thinking whether the department is coming up with something like that. There would be private sector and people that want to be involved in something like that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, we can't move without realizing that there's a parallel process that is embarking on public hearings of the amendment of Section 25. And I'm continuously forced to probe on this issue because I want to understand the state of readiness from the department, also from the Land Claims Commission. Should the wishes of the majority of South Africans be realized, and expropriation of land without a compensation is realized, and particularly what has come up in public hearings, the issue of 1913 is substituted with 1652, as eloquently put by ATM over this past weekend. What is its impact on the Lamosa judgment, but also your first claims, as well as the 1998 land claims? Because I continue to ask the question, Teacher. If this is realized, you have the Koi of Dorman that fought intensively with Auchumayo, the first prisoner on Robben Island, fighting for this area of Table Bay. They come now as land claimants. But you've got Saldanha Bay and Borland, which, if I were eloquent in pronunciation of these Khoi groupings, the Kotokwa would come as claimants to the Borland region and also the Saldanha region. What is the department going to do in such an eventuality? I want to really ascertain your thinking on this and your readiness on this, because it is a reality fast coming. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I leave all the difficult questions to the Deputy Minister. I'm glad that he is here. I'll respond to the two. One regarding the OVG and the issue of the autonomy and the difficult one of the private sector and the eventuality of the amendment of the of Section 25. I'll leave those two to the Deputy Minister. He has agreed that I dedicate up one. The OVG has been a challenge with capacity, Jefferson. which is one of the reasons it has caused this enormous backlog for the commission. We have done two things. The minister has approved the Valuer General in terms of the Property Valuation Act has power to approve the structure of the Office of the Valuer General in consultation with the minister. The minister has agreed to filling in of about 21 posts in the Office of the Valuer General. Those posts have all been advertised to increase the capacity of the Valuer General. And mostly the posts are your professional valuers that are being appointed, because that's where the blockage is. The critical mass of valuers that are needed. The second one is that realizing that the valuer general really needs to be setting norms and standards in terms of valuations for land reform. So we have agreed with the Office of the Valuer General that it will provide the Commission and the Department, by the way, because the blockages in the Office of the Valuer General are not only impacting on the Commission, they also impact on the Department insofar as land redistribution is concerned, because of the long turnaround times because of capacity challenges. So we have agreed with the Office of the Valuer General that it will sign a service level agreement with the Commission and the Department, authorizing the Commission to conduct its own valuations. And then, in terms of the norms and standards that will be set by the Office of the Valuer General, and all that the Valuer General will do quality assurance in terms of ensuring that the valuations commissioned by the Commission are in line with the Property Valuation Act, and then issue a certificate. And we're hoping that will drastically reduce the backlog. So that is what we are doing. With regard to the autonomy, the Chief Land Claims Commissioner has briefed to Deputy Minister Squatcher, who has been delegated with the responsibility to oversee the work of the Commission in the Ministry. As you know, all Deputy Ministers have been delegated certain functions, and the work of the Commission is dedicated to Deputy Minister Squatcher. The Chief Land Claims Commissioner has briefed the Deputy Minister. She has also briefed the Minister, and we were together when she was briefing the Minister. The Minister has asked me and her to work towards the development of this plan for autonomy. But this is the point that the Minister is making. It can't just be autonomy for its own sake, just ticking a box that you are compliant. How does the Commission's work turn around, speed up the resolution of the land claims? That's the Minister's focus. Yes, it is necessary for the Commission to be autonomous as specified by the law, but it can't be autonomy for its own sake. It has got to result in speedy resolution of outstanding claims. That is the task the CLCC and I have been assigned by the Minister to deal with, determine the resources that are required, and see the gradual empowerment of the Commission to be truly autonomous. That is where I'll stop and leave the rest to the Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Mayor. My question before I think generally, perhaps following up on what the DG says on the question on whether we are ready or not, I think we've been ready for a long time, but it doesn't help to be ready when you don't have the own report bodies to be able to meet the obligation. And I think for us, that is the anxiety. Because if you don't have financial muscle to be able to set up all of the structures, then you can have an autonomy plan all you like, which will not come to fruition. In court, we've got about, I think, 318 cases currently pending, I think, in litigation. Right now, I'm not able to offhand cost those, but we've got some documents around contingent liability associated with that. Perhaps we can share. I don't want to off the cuff say that
the case expenditure automatically will be reduced or will save. I haven't done that analysis. But of course, we're clear that if our business processes are slicker, we are able to settle claims faster, and of course that will lower the cost of settling claims in general. The issue of late claims in communal areas that were not well rejected, I think I spoke to earlier, one of the examples was that of the betterment schemes where people were discouraged from lodging claims, which is an issue that we had to correct through a court order, but also through the 2014 Amendment Act, which was about trying to address that, those issues, which is why we're saying we know that some people then lodged in 2014 because they couldn't before. I think the other issues that I will also leave to the DA. Oh, the research issue. The research issue, as I indicated, we learned lessons and we put interventions in place. For example, when I said that we brought in the universities to assist with the research, that was exactly us acknowledging that we had challenges with the quality and also the capacity issues. So as a result, we were able to move quickly. But again, now the contract to work with the universities has expired, but there are lessons again that we've learned where we had challenges and we didn't necessarily get what we thought we were going to get. So we're reviewing that again. So it's not that we haven't done anything at all. We brought in universities to help us with external research. But there are issues that we have to clean up again there. In terms of a letter, that if a claimant comes and has an acknowledgement letter, it's not just automatically a situation where we then acknowledge. There's a whole process that is undertaken. In fact, it's the Regional Land Claims Commissioner that must then, after considering what is in, given in writing, approve that that claim is condoned, and the formal process and the sign off by the Regional Land Claims Commission to say, based on the information that has been presented. And so the letter is not just going to be a letter. It will have to have a department letterhead, a stamp, sign off, and all of those things. And we can verify based on further information of where the person lodged, how, and all of those things. And then we make that determination. But only one person is able to to make that determination after formal assessment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think this would be audible enough. Chair, thank you very much. I firstly want to apologize for arriving so late in the meeting. As I was walking out to the meeting, I was ambushed in my office by some affected people in some farm. The two specific questions that I am told have been left to me, and I identified as the most difficult. Maybe let me just elaborate more on the importance of the autonomy of the commission. And I can assure you, the CFCC does want to be autonomous. But all she is saying is she also appreciates when there is an indication that there are not sufficient resources for A, B, and C. One of the advantages for, as the Minister has indicated, as audibly said here by the DG, on the autonomy, not for autonomy's sake, one of the little advantages if the Commission is autonomous. Members would recall that almost after every 5 years, the President from Parliament must then reopen for a period because not everybody has been able to do what? To lodge claims. You know? Now, that, and it has to be a process that goes by law through parliament and so forth. The advantage of an autonomous structure is that it would be able to operate, consider, and not wait for years before a law is passed again for some reopening. On the issue of District 6, Chair, I want to say we, the issue that Honorable Steyn raises had gained some favor in the circles of the department. You know, we had that discussion. In fact, it was initiated by me to the minister. We would all appreciate that this district 16 is a first of its kind, and it might really create, you know, precedence. And our own engagements with the people of District 6, they've got all kinds, you know, others are looking at one's own house being some waterfront type of, you know. So we, in the spirit exactly of what the Honourable Member is saying, we wanted to engage in what we would call an investment conference, specifically located geographically, from business people who are located in this particular part of the world, without negating those that may come from somewhere, so that people show their commitment in trying to meet government halfway in resolving this enormous challenge. So the brief that I'm saying is that it's not an issue that is way off the mark. It's an issue that we are seriously considering. The last one, Chair, is I know that it's your pet subject, this one, of the what is considered now through the public hearings as something that is coming on very fast, the issue of 1652 as opposed to 1913. That's there. Maybe. Let me say that probably it's an unfair question to the department, and I thought that you were summarizing it well when you were saying that it's a political question. And I don't think that it's an issue that has to be attended to by the officials. It's a genuine issue that you are raising. But because why I'm saying that the officials cannot answer that question, because they ought to act according to the law, to an act of parliament, you know. So if there is such, the politicians must then decide how do we handle that when the people of South Africa say A, B, and C, and from their own different political parties, and probably you and I will meet it under one roof, agree and disagree on that particular matter with all its complications. So the brief that I'm saying is a, it might, those must holistically look at it as well. The public hearings are very important, and they are expressing what does Parliament say to the will of the people, you know? And what is the nature of the will of the people? What are going to be the implications? So, briefly, sir, I'm saying that it's an issue that would have to be attended to politically. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Deputy Minister, the Honourable Squatcha, DGs of the Department, Baumlengane, Baushabane, Mamukoboto, with the officials, the Land Claims Commission, for having been with us today. I would want Honourable Members to conclude this session with us to look into the public hearing of the ad hoc committee on the amendment of section 25 of expropriation of land without compensation with real interests of the people of the Republic of South Africa. And I can tell you the message is of uniformity, in that they want their land now. wherever we've been, in Mpumalanga, in Northwest, and Gauteng this past weekend. And the date is clear. 1913 must fall and be replaced by 1652. And I would want to bring it to the attention of the department so that you don't miss these things. We are a committee that looks at things very early, DJ. We warned about the court application for an extension as early as August. We reminded you in November. We are dealing with that matter now. The extension is fortunately has been put to the court in the 25th of February. But what I'm putting to you, listening to the Ndebeles when we were in Middleburg, the Ndebeles say they want their land that was lost to them. And this has brought me to looking into the historical documents of disposition. This is why I'm raising the issue of the Khoi led by Doman and Outhumayo on the frontier of the castle will be claimants of the entire land that resides on the Table Bay map. And the Khoi other groupings in Saldanha map, as well as Borland map, will be claimed. Is the department and the commission looking at these issues? What will be the impact of the amendment of Section 25 as per the will of the people be on these claims? Both the existing ones and the outstanding ones of 1998. With that said, dear, I will leave it on your table as the department and the Land Claims Commission to continue looking into this subject. Honorable members, let us thank you for your attendance. And just notices, can you please be advised that Parliament is currently, as of 12 o'clock, conducting screening for the coronavirus, COVID-19, at key entry and exit points in New Wing Entrance, Port Base, Max Building, an NCOP entrance at the visitor center in 90 Plain Street foyer, which is of 12 o'clock today. And it will be conducting these screenings until Friday, the 20th of March, 2020. The screening process will entail temperature checks, completion of a register and questionnaire for those presenting symptoms such as fever, chills, coughing, shortness of breath, and difficulty of breathing, general body malaise, as well as headaches, memasho. All members are requested to present themselves at the relevant points upon entry to Parliament. Your assistance in this regard will be highly appreciated. DG, the committee would like to again receive confirmation on your part in terms of the third quarter and fourth quarter reports so that we may dispense of those. Then we would like your APPs so that we may also be able to schedule our strategic workshop on time. So if you can revert back to us, DM, on those two items as soon as you can. Honorable members, we don't know what the fate of the decision of Parliament will be in terms of the rest of the other sittings, and if we'll also be on lockdown. But please look on to the announcements that will be made in the course of the day and the week ahead. I wish you all the best of today and the week ahead. Please stay safe. Coronavirus is real. Be tested and protect yourselves. I thank you.